the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, where we discuss all things crypto-related. Your host, Kieran Ryan.
Tether, the company behind the US dollar pegged stablecoin, reported an astonishing $13 billion in profits in 2024 with just 150 employees, a feat that outshines giants like Goldman Sachs, and all without traditional marketing. Banks and many others are eyeing these figures with envy, and many are planning on launching stable coins of their own, and it's easy to understand why. But how sustainable is this? Much of Tether's profit comes from interest earned on U.S. treasuries, and what does this tell us about the U.S. dollar's supposedly declining role as the world's reserve currency? To answer that, we're joined by an old friend of the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, Omer Iqbal, who is CEO of Five West. Omer, good to talk to you again. Tether's story, as you probably know, it's quite remarkable. Just 150 employees, $13 billion in profit last year. And that works out at about $90 million per employee. That's way ahead of companies like NVIDIA, Apple, and Microsoft in terms of profit per employee. But maybe help us out here. What's the backstory? There's something going on with US dollar stablecoins that is finally attracting market interest. What's your take?
Hey, Kieran. Thanks for having me back. Yes, absolutely incredible story. I think it's a reflection of two broader trends: the extraordinary capital efficiency of crypto infrastructure and the high yield investments that have been created by the global monetary policy. Unlike traditional firms, I'd say Tether doesn't manufacture hardware, doesn't manage massive staff or runs marketing campaigns. So what Tether does is that it manages a vast pool of customer deposits, which are mostly parked in US treasuries. Interest rates are currently at multi-decade highs, which are earning about 4 or 5% annually over $100 billion in reserves. It's essentially risk-free income in traditional financial terms. What's new here is that it acts like a function of a shadow central bank issuing its own currency, which is USDT. So that's the reason they're able to create so much profit with minimal employees.
Yeah, how sustainable, though, is this business model of Tether's? Competitors will be looking at these figures and saying, you know, we've got to get into this. We've got to start issuing our own stable coins. We want a piece of the action. Can these profits continue?
Look, there's definitely a rush now. Banks, fintechs, and even payment giants want to replicate this. But Tether's moat isn't just a first mover advantage. It has deep liquidity, which is probably the most important thing, along with exchange integrations and a strong user base across emerging markets, especially in countries with unstable local currencies. So if you take Africa, for example, USDT is king there. Like, people trust that more than any other stablecoin. So to get that trust and to build that trust is going to take a long time. So Tether's definitely got that advantage, especially in emerging markets. That being said, I think the business model's sustainability hinges on two factors: the size of its reserves and the level of interest rates. If interest rates fall sharply, profits will also shrink. So that's something that Tether's obviously been looking into, which is why they're going venturing into new stuff, which we might speak about later. And then the biggest threat, I would say, is also regulatory scrutiny is also intensifying, which could reshape the stablecoin landscape entirely. So the margins look great today, but that isn't guaranteed a repeat year on year.
Right. And I mean, if you look at Africa and the adoption, you are involved in many countries across Africa. So maybe talk about that. And one of the things you've mentioned before, which I found very interesting, is the Africans are discovering that they can actually dollarize their lives, in the sense they can convert their local currency into Tether. That protects them against these huge depreciations we've seen in currencies like the Malawian kwacha. I think the Zambian kwacha has been fairly steady, the Zimbabwean zig, even the South African rand. But there's another factor, and that companies are doing the same. They're creating treasury services or treasury reserves using Tether. Talk about that.
Yes, it's quite interesting. So what we found when we've been speaking to a lot of corporates and a lot of our clients, the wild volatility that their local currencies have been having was actually affecting their profits. It was affecting the time they could get the work done. And it was even affecting, if you take daily lives of African people, because if you're earning, let's say, 10,000 Rand, and if you dollarize that, that's what, 2 years ago, 13 to be now sitting at 18 and a half, it's a huge swing. Nigeria, we were trading at lower levels of 600 a few years ago. Now you're currently sitting at the 1600 mark. So people started realizing that if they can actually start managing their float or managing their treasuries in USDT, which is fairly stable and pegged to the US dollar, they can actually earn a lot more. And sometimes what people do is if you want to pay money, so let's say someone works in South Africa and wants to send money back home to Nigeria, they can convert to USDT in South Africa, send USDT back home to Nigeria in a couple of seconds, and now they're selling the USDT at a very high premium. So their people at home are getting a lot more money out of it than using a traditional bank where you'd be getting the local spot, the spot rates, and it's taking days. So I think USDT and crypto, that's what it's been used for now. And it's got a very good use case when it comes to hedging your bets against the volatility of our, especially our African currencies.
So what if you're Nigerian and you want to send money to South Africa or the United States? Who's taking on the risk? I mean, if they're buying Tether, let's say it's Five West, are you taking on that risk or is somebody else?
So you mean who's taking the local currency in?
The local currency risk, the Naira risk, yeah.
So there are liquidity providers all over Africa who are licensed in that specific jurisdiction. So they have use cases of people wanting to bring to use that local Naira. So they use that Naira to pay people who want Naira, and they use that USDT. So it's essentially, it's peer-to-peer trading, right? So that's what they're doing. So no one's really taking the risk. There is a little bit of fluctuation and currency risk, but usually people are just trying to net off their books by matching ins and outs.
Okay, let's get back to Tether. They just announced now that they're moving into AI. They've launched a new project called Tether Data. That's an open source AI aimed at countering big tech's monopolization of the space. So they're really taking on ChatGPT and Grok and these others. It's going to be looking at real world challenges. This is what they're trying to solve there. Challenges like translation, voice assistance, and digital asset management, which of course is fairly logical for them. Is this going to be a smart move, do you think, for Tether?
Yeah, look, it's a fascinating pivot. And obviously, with more and more competitors and players coming into the market, Tether had to do something. Also, with regulatory scrutiny, I think it's always important to have to diversify. And I think that's exactly what Tether's doing. They clearly want to expand beyond stablecoins. And open source AI aligns with crypto's ethos of decentralization and transparency being the most important. If they can build AI tools that manage digital assets, detect fraud, or even improve user accessibility in emerging markets, that could actually strengthen their core business. That being said, competing with big tech in AI is a different ballgame altogether. It's capital intensive, fiercely competitive. So it's a smart move in principle, I'd say, but the execution will be key. That's everything. So it depends on how they execute it, in my opinion. And that would really put them apart.
I guess what's also interesting about Tether is its reserve backing. I mean, if you look at traditional banking, you did describe it quite interestingly as its own form of central bank. Central banks are quite highly leveraged, and they rely on these Basel Accords that require banks to set aside certain amounts of reserves for different types of loans with different risks. What Tether is doing is it's fully, as I understand, fully backed. So it's got a market cap of $143 billion, and that's backed by cash or near cash in the form of treasuries and other instruments that can be liquidated fairly quickly. Now, there have been questions and some court cases about the transparency of this reserve backing. What's your take on this? Are they solid in terms of reserves?
So there's always been somewhat controversial because of the questions around its reserves, right? We've all read that over the last few years. It's been very, very controversial. The company says it holds $143 billion in assets, mostly in US treasuries and other liquid instruments. And they now publish quarterly attestations, but that's not the same as a full audit. And that keeps the regulators and the institutions cautious. But still, even despite that, market confidence is growing, especially in emerging markets, and especially in our African and Asian markets, we see that it's growing and growing. The confidence is growing, but despite them having full audit reports available. The fact that Tether also didn't collapse under pressure in multiple liquidity crises, including the 2022 crypto crash, has given it some credibility. But until we see regular real-time third-party audits, questions will linger. And it just depends whether you trust it or not. They've been around for a while now. And yeah, look, it's growing. And that's why I think they're trying to diversify into their new AI venture, is because they're trying to build more credibility in the market by just not being a stablecoin provider.
Yeah, look, I think part of their reserves as well, they've got some Bitcoin and they've got other assets they've bought into some stocks as well.
Yes.
And I, if I'm not mistaken, Apple being one of them. Well, you know, that could be fairly volatile if you're holding on to Bitcoin, but I think that is kind of surplus collateral for them. I mean, and they really have bought quite a chunk of Apple and quite a chunk of Bitcoin as well. But if, you know, if Bitcoin was to go down 30, 50, 60%, you know, these are the times that people would start to question these the extent of their collateral, right?
Yeah, look, I think that's why people sometimes are very cautious, because they hold a lot of stocks and they hold a lot of Bitcoin on their reserves. And with Bitcoin being that volatile, I think that's exactly why people don't somewhat trust the assets under management that they actually say they have. But also their assets under management with the recent crypto pump over the last year increased dramatically, which is also probably caused by the rise in Bitcoin price. So you're very right in saying if the Bitcoin price did have to dump overnight, or if the stocks had to dump overnight, they would be in a bit of trouble. And I don't think they'd be left with $143 billion in reserve.
Be that as it may, I mean, if they're sitting at around about 143, and even if they were to drop that, you know, by 10 or 15%, that's still, it's still far more secure than you have with any bank, right?
Correct. Yeah. And look, that's why you have to describe it as a digital bank or a custodian, because that's exactly what they're doing. Sometimes you can't even trust that the bank is holding that much assets under management, because most of it is invested in high yielding stocks and bonds and et cetera. So I'd say they're doing exactly the same job as a bank, and it's just a digital one.
All right, let's talk about the crypto market more generally, and maybe give us an update on the progress that you're seeing at Five West about, you know, crypto adoption. I know that you were very aggressive in going after merchants and getting them to start accepting crypto as a form of payment. And, you know, what are people using crypto for these days?
Look, at Five West, we've seen very strong momentum over the last 2 years, I'd say. Businesses in Africa are turning to crypto, not for speculation, but for real use cases like international payments, treasury management, and inflation hedging. What's changed in the last 12 months is that stablecoins, especially USDT and USDC, are now being viewed as a digital dollar for much of the world. So adoption is shifting from just buying and selling crypto to actually using it. We're building tools to make the process seamless, secure, and scalable. The next few years are going to be about building infrastructure, and that's where we're focusing on. So in the beginning, we were more focused on OTC, but now we then ventured into the crypto payment gateway. Now we're venturing into a payment system, combining traditional finance into and crypto finance and bringing it all into one. So we're really developing infrastructure around that. Our main goal would be to be a digital bank in the next 3 to 5 years. And that's what we're really working on, because we feel that Africa needs that Revolut type of model, just so that it becomes seamless for people in Africa to be able to send money freely. So that's what we're working on. We're going to be doing quite a bit of work on that over the next 3 to 5 years, I'd say.
Did I hear you correctly? Your plan is to move towards becoming a bank, a digital bank?
Yeah, so not necessarily a bank, but like we want to be a platform where we offer different currencies and obviously have the right licenses in place in each jurisdiction, and then have an app for people to seamlessly be able to swap between currencies, hedge into the USDT or USDC market quite easily, and then convert it back when they actually need to make payments.
Right. So the Revolut model that you mentioned, and Wise would be another company that's very big in this space. They primarily focused on payments, cross-border payments, right?
Yeah. They're focused on cross-border payments, but I think they've struggled to penetrate the African market. So there is a bit of a gap in this market, and that's what we're trying to be working on. We're going to get a new team with more experience based on that, just so that we can try and build it and then go around Africa, try to get the necessary licenses in place. But yeah, it's a plan of ours. Let's see if we can pull it off. Hopefully we can. We've done some good work over the last 6 years. So yeah, we're quite excited for what the next five bring for us.
And just to wrap up, how many countries in Africa are you in now?
So we've got South Africa is our primary one, but we've got liquidity partners in Nigeria, Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, Rwanda, some ZAF and ZOF regions. So yeah, we're working in quite a few African countries with trusted liquidity providers all over, licensed liquidity providers. So yeah, it's going quite well. Yeah, but we're looking to open up more avenues and trying to expand quite heavily in other African regions as well.
Why are crypto companies so reluctant to enter Zimbabwe?
It's been on the grey list for quite a while, so it's not something that we can work with. Just because to work there, we can't work with any countries that are on the grey list. So Sudan, Zimbabwe, so those are countries that we can't work with. Also, their market relies a lot on the US dollar and cash, and that's something that we don't deal with at BioQuest either. So that's why a lot of companies are quite hesitant.
I thought that Zimbabwe was actually removed from the grey list a couple of years ago, as we were put on it, that they were removed.
So I think they were removed, but it's still about the risk appetite of the country. So even though they were removed from that, their economy runs a lot on cash. And that just brings a whole new ball game to the table, a whole new risk to the table. And that's something that we definitely, as a company, don't really want to get involved in.
Right. So their economy, and I mean, this has been reported extensively, I think something like 80-90% of transactions are in US dollar cash.
Yeah, it's in US dollar. Also, to get your hands on the local currency, there's an auction to buy dollars and stuff. It's just a whole process that we did look into it, but obviously the risks just outweigh the rewards. And that's regulatory issues as well. So yeah, it's a hard market to penetrate, and there are a lot of easier markets that you could penetrate. Zimbabwe is a good market because I think you have a lot of people from Zimbabwe working in South Africa. So it'd be a very lucrative market, but I just think the cons outweigh the pros.
Now, what about Nigeria? Because Nigeria has historically been quite hostile towards crypto. They arrested two Binance executives some time ago. They were released. But I think any crypto executive will be very reluctant to arrive in Nigeria for a meeting with the government, having seen what's happened there in the last few years. Or have things changed significantly since then?
I think, look, things have changed. No one to speak about what happened in that whole matter. So definitely we don't want to get into that. But I think a lot of it's shifting. Everyone's opening their eyes to people. So you can either buy it in the black market, or you can actually then regulate it and do it the right way. And I think Africa is starting to realize that. And they were trying to shut a market down, but then the black market was actually just gaining more and more momentum. So the governments are starting to get more involved in it and trying to regulate it. So it's a good time to be entering these markets as new companies as well, I would say.
Fantastic. We're going to leave it there. Thank you very much for joining us. That was Omar Iqbal, who is the CEO of Five West.
Thanks, Kieran. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to the MoneyWeb Crypto Podcast, hosted by Kieran Ryan. To listen to our other podcasts, go to moneyweb.co.za or the MoneyWeb app, and follow MoneyWeb News for daily updates.